This is episode 298 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, September the 20th, 2010.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, in your backyard, and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb, and welcome to this 298th edition of Tech Talk Radio. Last Thursday, Microsoft launched a beta version of its latest incarnation of web browser, Internet Explorer 9. Amongst all the pomp and pageantry reserved for such an occasion, what was presented at the Melbourne launch of the software by Microsoft developer evangelist Michael Kodai was quite impressive. Our briefing was just 5 hours after the product was revealed in San Francisco, over breakfast at a Melbourne hotel. Aside from the already announced support for HTML5 and hardware acceleration, Microsoft unveiled a clean new user interface for Windows 7 and new security tools. The user interface was stripped down to leave its sites front and center in the browser. This new sparse GUI maximizes space for the website. Sure, you can turn on the old features you may be used to, but in this new browser, it's quite easy to get the hang of it, despite only a few days of use. The browser was integrated with Windows 7 to take advantage of the tools in the operating system. One new feature is Jump Menus, which is a list of web developer-chosen shortcuts you can pin to the taskbar in Windows 7. Simply drag the site icon from the address bar and pin it to the taskbar. Then, with a simple right-click on the icon on the taskbar, you can navigate to pages without even opening the browser. You can find an example of this in action with the Tech Talk Radio website, and you can even launch the live stream to listen to the show without even opening your browser. Users can go directly to tasks via the site, such as sending email, accepting a friend invite, or going directly to a news story, without working their way through the site's interface first. IE9 also supports hardware acceleration with its Chakra engine, leveraging multi-core CPUs. Microsoft's claim to be the first to use full HTML5 hardware acceleration using the GPU for graphics processing, a goal Chrome and Firefox were both working on, and something which is very impressive to see. The company also claimed to have sorted out the back button, so users navigating within a site's own inbuilt tabs would also be able to use the browser's controls without confusing matters. If you're keen to try the new browser, in the few days I've been playing with it, it seems quite stable, although with any beta, you'll be sure to find a few bugs and maybe even the odd crash. Microsoft has built a comprehensive test site where you can compare browsers side by side on your own PC. Visit ie.microsoft.com/test drive, where you can download the beta and run it through its paces. Internet Explorer 9 is not for everyone. If you're running Windows XP, then the recommendation is to stick with IE8, as the IE9 browser is paired with Windows 7. And if you're a Mac user, then stick to Safari. Microsoft are looking after their own customers with IE9, with the aim of the new browser being to embellish the online world of the Windows 7 user only.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Dr. Ron and I report on the IE9 briefing in Melbourne last Thursday. Adam Turner has hands-on with Microsoft's new mobile offering, Phone 7. HTC launched the Desire HD, another Android phone. Apple finally gets a Google Voice application into the Apple App Store. And NBN Co. reveal its IT rollout progress. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Microsoft launches the beta release of its latest web browser, IE9. Malcolm Turnbull is appointed as the coalition's new communication spokesman. A Google software engineer is fired after inappropriately accessing users' accounts. Twitter announces a homepage redesign, and a social experiment by Queensland University literally drowns a plant with love. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Microsoft has released the first public beta of its latest web browser, Internet Explorer 9. The IE9 beta was launched internationally on Thursday last week, and Microsoft says the browser has been specifically designed with users in mind. With a more Spartan, Chrome-styled look and feel, some of IE9's new features include dockable and movable tabs, support for taskbar jump lists, and searching from the address field. Microsoft product specialist Michael Cordai said that IE9 was fully HTML5 and CSS3 compliant, and that the end user's experience was all important.
You're going to see standards everywhere. You're going to see HTML5, you're going to see CSS3, you're going to see Canvas, you're going to see HTML video, you're going to see stuff that you expect from a modern browser. You're going to see this notion that surfing the web is more about the site that you're in and not the browser that you use, which is kind of strange since we're here talking about IE, we're talking about a browser. But one of the powerful things that IE9 is bringing to the table is it's kind of removing the browser out of the equation. So the idea is... IE brings your site to the forefront and not necessarily the browser.
The IE9 beta is available for download now from beautyoftheweb.com. The federal member for Wentworth and former opposition leader Malcolm Turnbull has been appointed as the Coalition's new Shadow Minister for Communications and Broadband. Mr. Turnbull said that while there are great opportunities to be realised in the internet economy, so too are there great risks. With respect to the government's proposed national broadband network, Mr. Turnbull said on government radio that "build it and they will come" is no substitute for rational financial analysis.
It is quite extraordinary that they're proposing to spend $43 billion of taxpayers' money on a project that they say will result in an asset worth $43 billion, and yet they have provided no evidence, no financial analysis, no business case, no financial models to justify that expenditure or to persuade any of us or convince any of us that this isn't going to be nothing other than a massive destruction of taxpayers' money.
In addition to this aggressive stance against the NBN, Mr. Turnbull was asked about his attitude towards the government's proposed net filter.
Well, I'm absolutely and utterly opposed to it, and as is the Coalition. It is a really bad idea from every respect. I have nothing good to say about the filter, and the best thing the government could do is drop it.
The Communications Minister, Senator Conroy, defended the government's plans for the construction of the NBN and referred to costings detailed in the McKinsey NBN implementation study.
Well, Malcolm is constantly quoting from the McKinsey's report, a $25 million report that outlines the financial viability of the NBN. It outlines the costings of the NBN and is a publicly available document of over 500 pages.
Senator Conroy said that the type of net filter being proposed for Australia was already in use in other Western countries.
The filter that we are talking about is in use in the United Kingdom today. 95% of every single internet user in the United Kingdom goes through a filter of the kind we are talking about. And it blocks 100% accurately the child pornography websites. In Finland, in Sweden, in a range of Western countries, a filter is in place today.
Senator Conroy went on to say that the only thing which would slow down the deployment of high-speed internet to Australian households was Tony Abbott and Malcolm Turnbull continuing to block legislation that would see a deal between the government, NBN Co and Telstra. Google has dismissed a software engineer after allegations that he spied on friends by inappropriately accessing their accounts. The Washington Post last week reported that 27-year-old David Barksdale had been accused of accessing teenagers' Google accounts without their consent. Software engineers like Mr. Barksdale are able to access sensitive Google data by virtue of their role in resolving technical issues for Google. A media release said that the company was significantly increasing the amount of time spent on auditing logs to ensure security controls are effective. The popular microblogging service Twitter has announced a homepage redesign. The Twitter.com website was rejigged last week to allow video clips and location information to be more easily embedded and displayed in users' tweets. With 370,000 new users signing up every day, and about 16% of these coming from mobile devices, Twitter's chief executive, Mr. Evan Williams, said the overhauled Twitter.com features a completely new architecture, which is more responsive and user-friendly. The redesign will be rolled out incrementally on a global basis over the next few weeks. And an Australian plant fed by Facebook friends appears to have been killed with kindness. An interactive project being run by the Queensland University has enabled Facebook users to water a plant by becoming friends or posting on the plant's Facebook wall. The project's creator, Mr. Bashkim Isai, said he wanted to see if people cared enough about a plant to keep it alive. Unfortunately for the plant, more than 5,000 friends worldwide have literally drowned it with love. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
TPG counts uploads in ADSL 2 Plus changes. Did you know about this, Graham?
Graham, can I do my bit here?
Off you go.
Oh, look at that.
Isn't that impressive?
Google Instant.
Google Instant.
What's changed in dental technology in the last 1,000 years?
Don't do that.
Yeah, we'll get a pair of pliers.
I'd like to explain it to him with a large hammer.
Fraud. What did you call last week, Graham?
Fraud debt. Do people not understand that radio frequency bandwidth is a very, very, very scarce resource?
Let's just change the subject briefly.
It's often described as the three strikes rule. A couple of warnings and then you're out.
That's my theory. I'm sticking to it. I could be wrong.
Yes, the pedestrians that want louder cars just need to get their heads out of there.
Shortcuts for people like Graham.
That does make some sense. Of course, even in the cities, we're going to need higher speeds than ADSL can do.
Graham is the Rob Oakeshott of Tech Talk Radio. How do you feel about that, Graham?
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and sitting in front of me today, Dr. Ron and Dr. Graham. Good evening, gents. How are you?
Very well, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very well, too. Thank you, Andrew.
Interesting week this week. Lots happened.
It's been a long week, and there's been lots happening.
In fact, it's one of those weeks where lots has happened, and yet nothing's happened. It's been, interesting. But anyway, as the night unfolds, I'm sure you'll all realise what we're talking about. But anyway, we had a fun week. Went into... had a nice fry-up in at Crown Casino for thanks to Microsoft. Had a look at their new browser. Very impressive.
Thank you very much, Microsoft, for having us in and having a look at the new IE9 web browser. Graham, it's been released in beta this week.
Yes.
Which is exciting. Have you installed it yet?
I've installed it on one machine. I've installed it on the machine at home.
Microsoft Chrome.
It's definitely Microsoft Chrome.
Affectionately calling it before the start of the program.
Internet Explorer with Microsoft... Chrome.
Yes.
Yes.
It runs noticeably faster
than its predecessor.
Actually, yes, I must say that it is the speed is an improvement.
The speed's an improvement. That's good coming from you, Graham. That's good. And what did you load it up on? Just your work machine or a home machine? Or
my main home machine, yeah. A desktop machine, yeah.
Have you noticed any bugs with it yet?
No, I haven't. No. I don't think
I've had a few little issues. It doesn't like compatibility mode for some strange reason on some websites.
Okay,
and it has crashed, but that's to be expected. It's a beta.
I've noticed a couple of glitches in the user interface. So perhaps when you're dragging a tab and trying to reorder the tabs or take a tab out to make a separate window, it's not quite smooth yet, but I assume they're working on that, or perhaps my graphics processor isn't up to speed. I'm not sure, one or the other.
They got some pretty interesting tests you can do too, comparing your browser. Like, you go to their IE website and load up IE on the left hand side of your screen and the browser of your choice on the right hand, and you can see the difference that the GPU makes. Very impressive with their little sprite-y things or their...
That's an interesting idea. That's as you say, it's a development that other browsers have been looking at, yeah.
It's a major leap forward, you know, in browsers. Like, you know, we saw Google come to the forefront last week with their new, you know, real-time search that they have. You know, and Google.com, the one that you were suitably impressed with?
Yes.
Well, I think this new browser from Microsoft was, it impressed me to a degree. Still using it, still getting the hang of it, and there's obviously certain things to play around with yet, but...
It's not that long ago I was actually cursing Microsoft for not being able to reorder my tabs in IE when I needed to use IE for something.
You can tear them out now.
Now they behave like tabs ought to behave.
Yeah.
You can do what you like with them. Take them out, put them in a separate window, do what you like. So, they fix some of those. You can type. They've got their search in their address bar working correctly too, which is nice. So, definitely heading in the right direction.
It's still important to note that it is a beta release, so there are still some bugs being worked out of it. It's not a final release yet.
If you've got a work machine and you need web browsing as part of your livelihood, and most people, you know, need it at some point or other these days, this is not for you. This is to install on your test machine or your second machine or a machine where you can try stuff out, and if it fails, it's not a big deal.
Yeah, but have a play with it. I'm running it on my work machine at work. That's where my work machine is, funnily enough. So, yeah, it's been good. I've written some code for it. I've been trying out some code. The biggest test will be a bit of website development when we start writing code, new designs and new things.
Now, where you've written code for it, has the code worked fairly well in other browsers as well?
Doesn't work at all in any other browser.
Oh, okay.
This is
so you're using the new graphics features and things.
I'm using some of the new features which are a part of the browser, and that's what I guess is a little bit exciting, because you've got to look at IE9 for what it really is, and that is it's an add-on to Windows 7. Nothing else. It's a browser for Windows 7.
Right.
If you plug it in, well, I think I asked Michael a question on the day. I said, "What about XP users? Because there's still a lot of XP users out there," and he said, "Recommendation would be stay with IE8." Because this is really IE9 for the Windows 7 experience. If you're using Windows 7, it'll work a treat. So,
So will it install on XP?
Oh, I'm sure it would. I haven't tried.
Okay. But it's not optimal for XP.
Yeah.
It's optimized for Windows 7.
Yeah. Yeah, and it takes advantage of a lot of the things like in the taskbar down the bottom of the screen. If you're running Windows 7 and you're running...
My taskbar's on the right of the screen.
Okay, well, yes.
On the right of the screen.
Cool. Wherever your taskbar may happen to be located, geospatially referenced on your desktop, just go and right-click on it, especially if you, say, drag an icon like the Tech Talk Radio icon out of the address bar, drag it onto your taskbar. Then look at all the world of things that appears when you right-click your taskbar, and even when your browser is not running. It lets you navigate and do functions and do all sorts of things without actually having to open up a browser to do stuff. It's very
so
clever.
It's using that new user interface that they've built on the taskbar. Yeah. Excellent.
Amongst other things. So I've had to play with that, and that works really, really well. So anyway.
The world is just so close to making that shift, isn't it, from XP to 7.
A new paradigm.
It's
Oh, sorry. Who's been using that lately?
It's just... yeah, you can just sort of feel it. You know, you can see Windows 7 coming towards us on the horizon.
We've got
can't you?
Service Pack 1, which is going to happen fairly shortly, and I think a lot of IT gurus like sitting on the fence until the first Service Pack comes out for an operating system.
Oh, look, and I'm the same. I wouldn't be without it on my own machines, but for my business customers, where they're running them in a domain. Connecting to servers, connecting to networks, running other business software on it. I haven't recommended that they go there yet. I've got maybe 3 people who've used it. One of them's connected it to a small business server 2003, and that's working really well, and I'm impressed by it.
Yep.
And I've got another customer that's run up test systems on their server 2008 style. They've got server 2008, Exchange 2007, that type of network. And... it worked well in that as well. But, yeah, there's still some things to be worked on, like integrating the networking with the documents folders. What are they called?
The libraries?
The libraries, that's right. Thank you, Dr. Ron.
I like libraries.
I love the concept, but it needs to be integrated in networking so that you can... just automatically have you connect to a server and the shared folder on the server gets added to the
shared.
Can
be dropped into the library.
Into the libraries and so on, yeah.
Mm. We'll be hearing from...
And it may be that that's possible and I don't know how to do it, but it's...
Someone would have done. That's what I like about Google. You can always ask Google gods and someone's
I'm sure you could do it by scripting or by stuff, but it should just be a simple thing. Just make a setting and it just happens.
Well, Michael Cordy, we'll be hearing from him a little bit later in the program, and he... spoke to us all at the seminar during the week. It was very informative, very
entertaining. That's right, that was our Thursday morning get out of bed early.
They had to
dangle a big breakfast in front of us to get us there, but it was worth the trip.
It was good breakfast.
It was very good. We were there with all the other journos there. You might have seen some of the tweet pics that came out of it and stuff like that. So
indeed, yes.
But look, it's an interesting migration, I guess, from evolution from IE8 to IE9. The other thing which I thought was pretty impressive was the lack of anything on the screen. Obviously, Microsoft are really trying to make the web page the hero and not the browser. So all of the fluff that tends to go around with buttons and ribbons and things telling you what's happening down the bottom is not there.
It's interesting, isn't it, that Google were the people that got that first. And I've been railing for years against all these extra toolbars and things that get installed in web browsers and saying, get rid of that toolbar, you need space for the window that the actual website is in.
There's a new feature in IE9 which I quite liked, and it alerts you when you start the web browser to say, You know, IE9 isn't starting quite as fast as it could be able to, and here's why.
Yes.
Here are the plugins that I'm installing, and here is how long this is how long in terms of seconds or milliseconds it's taking to load these extra add-ons. You've got Google Toolbar, you've got this, you've got that, you've got all these other things, and that adds up to 800 milliseconds here. Do you want to disable these now? Or do you want to be reminded of this a little bit later down the track, or just want to plough on regardless?
Yeah, I noticed that. That is a good idea, and I've seen third-party applications that do similar things. It's a nice one that Microsoft have rolled in.
One of the other features that I think is really nice about it is when you click a new tab to open up and go to a new page, it actually shows you your frequently used and most popular sites as a thumbnail icon with a little bar underneath.
Yeah, Chrome does that,
showing your popularity, which I thought was really quite cute.
Well, they've stolen a lot of... Well, they've done their research and taken the best features from...
They don't steal, they plagiarise.
Well, they've researched, I suppose. But yeah, all those features that we like in Chrome, they've... incorporate into their product as well, which is good.
No, it's good. Everyone's a winner. They're taking the best of the best features of the best products and putting it all together. It's good.
All right. We might actually have a listen while we're talking about it now. We'll come back to Coro in just a sec.
Why not? Why not indeed?
We'll catch up with our sojourn last Thursday at Crown Casino.
Michael, it's an exciting time for Microsoft. I felt a disturbance in the force this morning about 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Melbourne time. Tell us what happened.
A disturbance in the force? That was me arising this morning. So I don't know, what time was it our time this morning when in San Fran we actually announced the public release of the IE9 beta, which means that everyone now can go to beautyoftheweb.com and download the beta of IE9. And this isn't the preview that we saw a little while ago. This is the full metal. This is what you're going to see, and this is what you can use on top of your OS. And it's a full browser.
Very exciting. We've been waiting for this for quite some time. For those of us that have been using other web browsers like Chrome and Safari, Firefox, give us a quick overview of what is new in IE9 and what we can expect from it.
Okay, so there's the polished professional marketing speak, and there's just the stuff that I've been using for the last week that have really turned me into an IE fan, right? A lot of it has got to do with the UI. So things like tabs, you can now tear tabs off and stick them. I've got three screens at home, and so you can stick tabs on multiple, anywhere you want to put them, basically, and you just tear them right off, and you can attach them to other instances of IE. And it's just this really nice, fluid way to manage tabs. The other is you'll notice that the actual UI has shrunk. So you no longer have all these toolbars everywhere. You can have those if you want, but I don't know how many pixels high the actual UI is, but we've collapsed the tab bar and the address bar. We've put the address bar together, so now it's just one address bar that's also a search box. But you'll see that the UI is kind of very minimalist, making it really fast. And the idea behind it, and this is one of the things that kind of came clear in my mind as I started using the beta a little while ago, it's that IE cares more about the site you're in than the browser that you're using. So, you know, the minimal kind of real estate on the browser is a really good example of that, right? Is that it's more about the content than the metal around it. You'll see some stuff around the ability to pin a site to Windows 7. So if you use the taskbar in Windows 7, you can drag a site onto the taskbar and just have it like it's an app.
There's a new term that I learned this morning, I must confess, jump lists. So that's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we learned that many Windows 7 users love jump lists, right? So if you put something on your taskbar, you can right mouse click on it. And, you know, if you have Outlook there, for example, you can, you know, launch a new email. If you have Windows Media Player, you can, you know, change tracks. We've taken that and brought it to the web. So now you can put, so one of the sites that we showed this morning, you know, you could drag it down to the taskbar and then be able to play music from your taskbar on a website, but it feels like it's a native, fast Windows app.
It's very exciting. And to clarify, for those of us that are still using XP, Microsoft are really wanting us to move towards the Windows 7 operating system, so we need to stick with IE8 for the time being if we're an XP user. Is that right?
So if you're an XP user, IE8's the recommended browser. IE9 beta is for Vista and for Windows 7. And largely the reason for that is not because we don't like XP users.
I wasn't going to mention that middle operating system. It's the one that we dare not speak its name, but that's okay. Yes, you said the Vista word.
I said the Vista word. So one of the really compelling things about IE, and I think one of the taglines that you'll hear is the beauty of the web. And as corny as that kind of sounds, IE brings hardware acceleration to the game, right? So when you visit a site with 1,000 thumbnails of images, or you're rendering video, or you're animating a whole bunch of stuff together to build a really nice, compelling UI. Doing that pre-IE9 is actually kind of hard because all that stuff is happening in CPU. What we've done is bring that to the GPU. So we've offset all of the graphics processing to be more like a native app, right, where you have the GPU taking care of all of that acceleration for you. And to get that acceleration, we're actually tapping into Direct 2D. And Direct 2D is only available on Vista and on Windows 7.
There are a couple of good test sites that you showed us this morning. One of them was ietestdrive.com. Just tell us a little bit about that.
So ietestdrive.com is a site we launched in March, I believe, which shows off what's possible with a hardware-accelerated rendering engine and a very standards-compliant-based rendering engine. We've got HTML5 in there, CSS3. You know, we support Canvas. We support all these new modern standards. ietestdrive is about showing off what that can mean to you when you build a site. So you'll see the more popular tests are the performance tests where, you know, you click on them and you can actually see, you know, 500, 1,000 fish swimming around the screen, all discrete little items that are animated around using JavaScript that you can really see what happens when you hardware accelerate a browser. I'd recommend going to ietestdrive to compare, to have a look and to compare with your current browser, but also don't just go to ietestdrive. Go to other sites that you use that kind of need a lot of grunt, play a lot of video, and just play them in IE and see what the experience is like.
All right, we're all going to go back to the office now and download IE9 beta. So importantly, where do we go to download it?
Beautyoftheweb.com is the place to go to not only download, but also look at what others have been doing. I didn't count them this morning, but there's Facebook, there's a whole bunch of major Twitter, a lot of major sites there that are showcasing the work that they're doing to make sure when you show up with IE, you get an advanced, you know, superior experience. So beautyoftheweb.com is the place to be.
Michael, thank you very much for having us here today and for giving us a terrific seminar and a great overview of the new Internet Explorer 9. We're all very excited about it and looking forward to using it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It was a bit of fun, wasn't it? I thoroughly enjoyed that.
It was. Beautyoftheweb.com is correct. Michael's website. We can go and download the installer.
Have you Googled that? It's very interesting to see what comes up. I think they've just bought that domain recently because I think the old description comes up from that website that was there. But anyway, that's what I discovered. Yeah, it was a very good informative breakfast briefing.
Jump lists. I hadn't heard that term before. But
that's what we've got now, jump lists.
It describes it quite accurately. That's that situation where you have a button or something minimized at the bottom of your screen on your taskbar, and you can like right click on it and you can get context sensitive options behind that button.
Yeah, you can actually almost execute code, really.
Yeah.
It could be an interesting place for people to do strange things, but nonetheless, it's good. If you have a look, Tech Talk Radio now has jump arrangements.
Has jump lists if you're accessing the website with if you're using Windows 7.
Windows 7 and IE9, you'll
see. And IE9.
I have some bad news, though. If you are using IE9, it doesn't like the Tech Talk chat very much. There's certain things, and I guess it's got to go into compatibility mode, but we'll see what happens, whether it comes up with the white screen of death, which I've noticed on a few websites I've been to today to have a look at some stuff. So, yeah, very much a beta. They've obviously got a little bit of work to do yet, but it's out there and it's good, I think.
Yeah, that's not a criticism of the product.
No, absolutely not.
It's normal for products in beta to have things that are still being worked on.
Yes, use at your own risk. But it was good. Are you going to use it, Dr. Ron? Are you going to play with it a little bit more?
I've got it loaded and I've been using it. The one website where I found I had problems was Brizzly, and Brizzly is a Twitter client or a Twitter site that I use because it's got a nice user interface and it works fine with Chrome, but IE9 had some problems. But as Graham said, it's still only in beta and I'm sure they'll sort a lot of those things out.
I wonder how many beta versions we'll get. I wonder if it'll be out for Christmas. Who knows?
Hopefully it will. But no, everything else that I used it with, it worked very well, was very fast.
Excellent.
Talk Radio.
Ah, yes, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Correspondence, Dr. Ron, you have some, I believe.
We have some indeed. More Microsoft correspondence. We've got some feedback from Jeff Alexander because TARDIS 3 asked us some questions last week.
Yeah.
Saying, how come Jeff didn't answer my questions the previous week? And we just couldn't get through.
Probably because we didn't ask them all.
I felt bad. I was sitting on the table.
We got distracted with our own thoughts, didn't we?
Absolutely.
TARDIS, I've got the answers that you need. Let me run through them quickly. TARDIS asks in relation to the latest version of Media Center. Internet TV parts of Media Center are not available in Australia. Are there any plans to enable this? And don't you think it's sad that Australians miss out? Jeff replied back, TARDIS. He said, yes, it would be a good thing to have. He agrees with you, but no plans to enable at this stage. TARDIS asks, the default power settings in Media Center don't fit well, yet it took me ages to figure out a way to reset them to work properly. Maybe something Microsoft can think about. Jeff says, in Windows 7, power settings are set to balanced. As there is no separate version of Media Center, as such, it's not something we could do out of the box. I would suggest this would be something OEMs could customise as part of the media of their Media Center builds.
Okay, what that means is if you buy a PC from a major supplier that's got Media Center pre-installed and set up, a dedicated Windows Media Center machine, that they might customise those settings for you as well. But yeah, because when you install it, you're really just installing the normal IE7. Yeah, the settings you get are the default settings for Windows 7. I mean, not specifically catered to Media Center.
For Media Center, is there a way to get Media Center to do all its updates, scans, and the like in off viewing times? It's so annoying, says Michael, when it gets busy just when I'm watching a show. Jeff from Microsoft says the default for Windows updates is 3 a.m. So unless it's changed, that's what it should be.
But you can set that in your system panel, can't you? For when you do your updates, you've got that choice of time, and
you can, yeah.
And you've got to have your machine on at that time for it to do it, though, don't you?
And there's other things that might go on as well, like your antivirus might decide to do a regular full system scan at some stage or other, and that would be set within it. That would be a third party thing that Microsoft wouldn't have much control over.
Michael says, Apple, with their front row interface, have an excellent way of viewing movie trailers. Can Microsoft do this with Media Center? Jeff's response, we've left this to third parties to do. One good example is Media Browser TV. So there are different skins and add-ons that you can load up on Media Center to do things like that. And last but not least, Michael says, how often do you intend to update Windows 7 Media Center? What are some of the upcoming newer features you have planned? Jeff says, Media Center is part of the OS, the operating system, so is subject to the OS update cycle. That's TARDIS, right. I hope that answers your questions.
Yeah, so Media Center will get a service pack when Windows 7 gets a service pack, and when Windows, the next generation, comes out, then so will the next generation of Media Center.
Of Media Center. Night Owl, via the TikTok radio contact form, says, dear TTR team, love your show, especially Adam's couch segment, and I especially like it when he's participating in the show.
Oh, that's nice of him to write in and say that. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Night Owl. That's great. Next, he has got a question, though. There is a cost. I'm probably one of the very few who is not on the Chrome bandwagon. The reason is I can't read the default size. I wear glasses, and no matter what I do, I can't make the default size bigger. Any help with this? Regards, Night Owl.
Yeah, buy a bigger monitor.
Bigger monitors often have higher resolutions. So,
you're right, Graham.
So sometimes that doesn't help, yeah.
My first response was I was in front of, I think, a web browser when I read this and held the control key down and used my click wheel on my mouse to scroll up and down.
Yeah, I'm doing that all the time, changes the default size. But he wants to change, that changes the actual size at the time, but he wants it to default to something he can read so he doesn't have to do that every time he goes to a page.
It's got
to
be a way.
A way in settings? Do you reckon in Chrome somewhere? There might be. Graham will work on that, Night Owl, and by the end of the program, we'll have an answer for you. GJMCN via the contact form says...
GJ's a regular contributor, isn't he?
He's a great contributor. I've been waiting for a cheap DAB radio and at last got one.
Really? Which one?
Also, I just bought a $69 Aldi, and then he's got in brackets...
That's a supermarket.
Vivid. Well, ALDI, he says.
Oh, no? Maybe it's not a supermarket.
No, Vivid countertop DAB/FM radio, and the difference is amazing. It tunes in seconds, has a perfect signal and warm sound, if not a little low on top and bottom peaks. If you switch it to FM or my AV receiver, forget it, says GJ. Too much static. So he likes digital or the DAB Plus versus traditional FM. Keep an eye out for it. And models by Kogan, he says. Internet and DAB, $119. That's cheap.
It's getting cheaper. It's still quite pricey for a tranny, though.
And Akai, DAB City software, $69. Thanks, GJ. Huh?
$69. That's a reasonable price for a digital radio.
That's great, isn't it?
You'll be able to listen to several things at once. That's how it works. It's like television, isn't it?
It is. It is. And last but not least, longtime friend of the panel, James, sent me a link to The Age during the week, which was to an opinion piece by much-loved Melbourne TV and radio personality Miff Warhurst. Miff wrote an article...
Okay, so this is an opinion piece. Okay.
Yes, titled, Such a Tragic Waste of Life, and she was bemoaning the virtual disappearance of Second Life and the tragic abandonment of all the poor avatars. They're all just dying and lying their lifeless.
So what's happened?
People are leaving Second Life in droves.
Oh, okay. So the novelty's over and people have found their first life again.
Yeah. They've got a firstlife.com or whatever the website is. And all the avatars are just,
just people lying there.
Yeah, just listless in Second Life. She says, what a pity. It's probably the only place left in Melbourne where people could still ride a bike without a helmet, smoke a cigarette in a restaurant, drive a car without a seatbelt, and make inappropriate advances on strangers. Thank you, James, for the link. Anyway, I'll pop the
link. Thanks, Miff, for those thoughts.
And Miff, for those thoughts, I'll pop the link there in the show notes. That's all our correspondence, Andrew.
Absolutely.
Feedback@techtalkradio.com.au is how to get in touch with us.
Or if you like, chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you want to have your say whilst we're live to air.
Or Graham.
Or forum.techtalkradio.com.au if you want to have your say when we're not.
Now, funnily enough, all those sites are now in the new quick launch bar on IE9 and Windows 7. Just right-click on that.
And even for people who haven't got IE9, haven't got Windows 7, the best place to go to find all the numbers, all the addresses, all the stuff, all the different ways of interacting with Tech Talk Radio is the main website, www.techtalkradio.com.au.
Correct. Now, can I be so bold as to
start the program at 20 to... Yeah, whatever the... 22, I'm not going to make a time announcement because it could be...
No. Let's not start the program just yet. That is, hit the rundown. I was just going to say, during the course of the week, are you familiar with the Australian politician slash... let me not go anywhere slanderous. Do you know Fred Nile?
Yes.
He doesn't like... He's very much against the Mardi Gras in Sydney and those sort of things, just to give you a bit of an insight into what this man's like.
He's a rather outspoken public figure.
Recently... He was, or someone in his office was caught looking at inappropriate material on his computer.
Adult content.
And he said, it was just research.
There's a lot of research going on.
A lot of research going on in his office. Now, can I just also point out that I've opened up a Facebook account for research purposes? I'm the Fred Nile of Facebook at the moment.
That was going to be my odd spot. What have you done? My odd spot was going to be Tech Talk Radio personality Andrew McCollum opened a Facebook account this week. It was. I'll have to find another one now.
Stop looking at me like that. It's true, Graham. There's this look of disbelief.
Have you added Graham as a friend? Graham's got a Facebook account.
I did. But
you won't see anything. I think his Twitter account's more active than his Facebook page.
Oh, really?
No.
it's funny. One of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it is a lot of people send you friend requests, if that's the right word, when you create an account. Now, one, I'm not going to name names here, but let's just say that this particular person is a wife of someone very near and dear to the Tech Talk Radio panel. And some of the discussion she was having today was, I thought, and this is Facebook? Good, I'm glad I... It's just, I think it's Twitter, you're limited to a very short period of time, and then
Facebook there's no limit.
Facebook opens up and people can write an essay there and can be really taken, and I'm sort of at a glance just looking at my device, my HTC today and reading things because I've got it all synced there to see how it all works.
Are you using it in the mobile format on your device? Because you can go to like m.facebook.com.
No, I'm using a third-party app to show it to me on the screen.
Oh, you can do that too. You can do that too.
Which is good. But yeah, it's funny. People do tend to wear their hearts on their sleeves and talk about the most strangest things in that thing. But anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you. So there you go. Beware. I didn't need help to set it up. Brian in the office is really good because he's very active on Facebook. He says, click all these boxes before you click this box. Okay, good. So I think we've locked it down well and truly enough. I was even talking to Lyd, our US correspondent, who has had the good news that daylight savings kicks in before our 300th show. So she may actually join us if it's, I think it's about like 1 o'clock in the morning for her there. She works 8 o'clock on Tuesday morning, so it's a bit tricky.
It changes on both ends, does it?
Yes.
It starts here and ends there, or?
Maybe there's a week or two overlap. I'm not sure, but we'll find out. If anything, it's an hour.
Over the whole change, at least it could be 2 hours difference, couldn't it?
It could. So, that was a bit of news for the week, amongst everything else.
Now, so how do we add you as a Facebook friend?
You don't.
Okay.
You search for Dr. Ron.
You can search for Dr. Ron if you like. I was going to say it'll be facebook.com/Andrew or TTR Andrew or something if you set up an alias name.
No.
Because you can do that too.
Can I? Mm. I have to show me how.
All right.
It's exciting stuff, isn't it?
Oh, it's riveting.
I'll stick to Twitter. It's much more fun. There's some great stuff up there anyway. Sorry. What do you...
Oh, Dr. Ron's looking at my screen because I'm researching this Chrome font size problem.
Oh, how did you go for Night Owl?
Well, I did. So there's a lot of people talking about the same problem. So
it's not uncommon. That means someone's got to be working on it.
Well, there's a couple of things going on. Apparently, there's a third-party extension that can do something, which allows you to set your own fonts. I'm not sure whether that's got any value or not. But it looks like you can... There's an interesting trick. If you you have to be using a fairly recent version of Chrome for this to work, so make sure you've updated Chrome. If you use the control click wheel thing to set the website to a size that you like, hit control plus on that website, and then all pages from that same domain. So, you know, if you do this on theage.com, and then any page from theage.com so will do that.
The whole
it will
thing,
default to that size.
Okay.
That's now. I haven't tried it, but that's what it says on this web page I'm reading now. So,
there's got to be a way.
Good luck, Night Owl. Let us know how you go.
Absolutely. Now, so some news that's happened this week. Do you remember Cool? C-U-I-L. It was a search engine that was launched about two years ago.
I vaguely remember mentioning it on the show.
Well, it's
I don't think I've ever used it in anger.
No. Yes, it's basically disappeared. That staff have been told to look for new jobs and. I think it's one of those good ideas at the time, and why would you try and compete with the incumbents? And this is what happened. So the search engine, which was launched 2 years ago, which had high hopes, I might admit, has all amounted to nothing in the short term. So good idea for trying.
It was at cool.com, C-U-I-L.com, but you're right, you've got to compete with Google. You've got to compete with Bing with all the power and money that Microsoft have got behind that. You've got to compete with all of the other, well, you know, entrenched and long-standing search engines.
Well, it's habit forming, isn't it? We all go to a certain search engine because that's what we're used to typing. We all use a certain browser because that's where our favorite bookmarks are in, and we know the shortcut keys and all that, and it's habit forming. So to break the habit of a lifetime, and when you think about it, you know, Google's only been around for 10 or so odd years. It's not a big lifetime when you think about it, but yet everybody uses it. So, yeah, thanks, Cool. Good effort. Didn't quite get there. Speaking of other interesting debacles during the course of the week, anyone here got a Big Pond account out of curiosity? Big Pond mail account?
I've got one that I don't use.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you don't use it because apparently there were 4 days last week where Big Pond's mail servers had gone into a thermonuclear meltdown.
Yeah, what happened? They had the mail unavailable for 4 or 5 days for some customers.
That's the big story. No, they're not going to. And I think that's more of a story than the fact that they had no mail. Is the fact that why aren't Telstra coming forward and saying, oh, we had a problem and this happened? What have they got to hide? It's a bit like a politician, really, isn't it? You know, if you don't put your funding through Treasury, what have you got to hide? Yes. But anyway,
I saw some tweets from the Big Pond account and from the Telstra account during the week. They were quite apologetic. Said, we're sorry, most customers should have their email back up and running now. There'll be a few that don't, but bear with us while we fix it. But they didn't offer any explanation that I saw.
No. Whereas you look at a lot of the other reputable ISPs, the iNets, the Internodes, or whoever, normally you will see their outage reasons, you know, like it's a DSLAM issue or a server issue or an upstream provider issue, or which traditionally means Telstra. But yes, it's one of those things that...
not always.
No, that's very harsh, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting, though. I'd suggest that that whatever did go wrong is something that they're a little bit embarrassed about.
Yes, that's why they're keeping it close to their chest.
It's hard to imagine what could fail that would cause an outage for so long.
Yes, it is. An unbacked-up server. An unbacked-up system.
Yeah, but one system, would that take down so many customers for such a long period of time?
Or something that got in there, like a virus or a worm, and it just destroyed the thing. That's the only thing I can think of. That's a big reason to go down for 4 days.
4 days is a long time, especially for
somebody
like Telstra with all the resources they have and the backups and the redundancies that they have in place.
Yeah, it is. There must have been something more to it than just something like what you're saying.
That's
right. There has to have been sort of perhaps multiple problems at once, or...
It's not going to be just one server failure or one UPS failure or one link failure. It's something very, very big.
Something systemic in the design, perhaps, or something that they weren't able to change.
Maybe they forgot to renew bigpond.com with the main registrar.
Maybe their Kaspersky ran out.
We can only speculate. If anyone working at Telstra knows or you want to share with us.
Or if you want to speculate with us.
You've got to speculate with us, then drop us a note at feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Yeah,
we'll ring the feedback number and leave us a message.
Do that
correct,
too.
Correct. We should spruik a little bit of that too with our 300th show coming up. If you'd like to record a little message for us, whether it's happy birthday or you're still here,
Are you guys still around?
Absolutely. Why don't you do
the
that?
The internet, is that thing still around yet?
Yeah, it's, I thought it was just a fad. Yeah, look, give it a ring and cast your message across there. Just record a little something for us and we'll play it on the radio. No spruiking of other podcasts or anything along those lines either.
Or blatant, shameless promotions.
We reserve the right to, be discretionary of those sort of things. But by all means, give it a ring and say good day, and we'll
We'd certainly like to hear from a lot of our regular listeners. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there who regularly email us and participate in the show, and it'd be good to...
It's a big surprise on our 300th show, did you know?
No, well, it'd be a surprise.
I don't know. When we work it out, it'll be a big surprise.
03-8682-8836, or if you're calling from outside of Australia, it's +613-8682-8836.
Now, the other thing of interest which happened during the course of our last show and this show is that a lot of the politicians now have new jobs. Now, Mr. Conroy is obviously still a Minister for Communications, but he now has a viable foe in the form of a ex-Liberal or Coalition Party leader, the member for Wentworth, to be particular.
Mr. Turnbull.
Mr. Turnbull.
Certainly a lot more viable, I would say, than Mr. Smith, who we only heard...
Who?
Exactly.
Who?
We only really heard from him in the last few weeks leading up to the election.
It's a shame that Mr. Smith actually met his demise and went back to being a parliamentary secretary in a lot of respects, because I was searching for the Lost in Space audio grabs, you know, warning, Dr. Smith, all that, remember? But now I can't use it. We've got Turnbull back in the fray again.
That's it, we do.
Anyway, there's going to be a bit of, heckling, for want of a better term, from one side of the lower house to the other side. Well, actually, the other side's upstairs, isn't he? He's in the red house, so there probably won't be that much heckling. They're probably just between leaders, but it's going to be interesting. Mr. Turnbull, I don't think has got much legs to stand on in respect to the rollout of fibre and the technology. We've had this discussion on this program infinitum about the lack of resources with wireless and wireless technology and the likes. So potentially, I think he might be focusing on the funds-related issue. And then you look at what the opposition, or should I say Labor, is going to do. The opposition say, well, you had $11 million black hole in your budget forecasting, and you stop calling a spade. So it's going to go on for a bit. But are we going to get a tenable parliament out of this? Because it all came down to broadband.
What Mr. Turnbull said during the week was that he and the coalition were very, very strongly opposed to what he called a $43 billion waste of taxpayers' money in terms of the NBN. He said they had no business plan, there was no financial analysis, no evidence. Mr. Conroy responded by referring him to the McKinsey report, which is an independent report.
500 pages. Go and read it.
Yeah, that's publicly available, saying correct, that it is costed and it will work. Mr. Turnbull didn't let up, though. He did, however, say that he was strongly, or to use his words, absolutely and utterly opposed to the net filter.
Aren't we all? Except for one.
Yeah. And Mr. Conroy, again, responded by saying that it's okay because the net filter we're going to use is in use in the United Kingdom, and 95% of every internet user in the United Kingdom goes through this net filter.
Well, as of 11 o'clock this morning, you'll be interested to note that the Coalition will refine rather than junk its broadband policy in the 3 years before the next scheduled election, according to the Manager of Opposition Business in the House of Representatives, Mr. Christopher Pyne.
And with someone of Mr. Turnbull's calibre in the key role, one would hope that refinement would lead to some significant change and improvement, assuming the man's allowed to do his job.
It's going to be interesting because you look at what they've got to be able to offer, and there's no technical solution, so they've just got to really make it work. And if you take a look at Tasmania, which is probably the only state in Australia which is enjoying benefits of the NBN, correct me if I'm wrong, this is from memory, there was a fairly substantial Labor gain in the areas where the NBN was actually operational. So there must be some level of approval down there, I would have thought. So... Anyway, we won't bore everyone to tears with this at this particular point in time, because there'll be more of it to come, I'm sure, in the next little bit, probably between now and the next Tech Talk Radio. When's everyone due back in the green room? Do you know, Dr. Ron?
I don't know when it's not far off, is it? The first sitting. It's not far off at all. But hopefully, we get some intelligent debate with Malcolm Turnbull in the position that. To which he's now been appointed.
I hope so.
He's an intelligent man. He's an informed man. He's been around for a long time.
He's got a bit of technical
nous. He does. He's worked in the industry for quite a while. I think he was involved with Aussie Mail and some ISPs earlier in his career. He's again, we've discussed whether or not Is he towing the party line with this whole thing about, you know, opposing the NBN? Is it a personal thing that he has that he wants to see that completely destroyed and wiped off the map?
That's the question, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, whether he is being forced to follow the party line, but he can then influence. As Andrew was saying, if they're reviewing their policy, and he is able to bring something better to the table, he may be able to influence it in a better direction.
Lieutenant Colonel Laney in the chat room says, last week he called it the National Broadcast Network. He did actually call it the National Broadcast Network.
Isn't it the ABC? Yeah.
And I called Windows 7 IE7 a minute ago, so
might have just been
people can have a slip of the tongue without necessarily meaning they don't know what they're talking about.
Exactly.
It happens. It happens regularly. In this show.
It does happen in this show. It happens on this microphone quite a bit.
It's late at night. Give us a break.
Hopefully we see some constructive debate. That's all we can hope for at this point.
That would be what we would be hoping for, yes.
And as you mentioned too, Dr. Ron, the internet filter, hopefully, well, as you said, the coalition in the voice of...
Dead. Buried,
well, hopefully cremated. It is dead and buried, but you know, if that may be the trade-off. We'll let you get away with your broadband if you kill off your net filter. Now, wouldn't that be a good outcome?
That would be the best outcome.
Okay, vote one for that. Let's
be. I fear it may not happen.
All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening. Coming up on the show, we're going to hear from Mr. Steve Jobs, the CEO of Apple, about Apple TV and the lack thereof. You know how everyone's got, you know, these great eye gadgets these days, and we all...
Apple TV Lite.
We went ho-hum when it came out the other day. Well, he's going to shed some light on that, which is quite interesting. Also, Adam Turner, View from the Couch, is coming up. Now, Adam's talking to David Glover, who is the phone guru, Phone 7 guru for Microsoft.
He popped into the office during the week.
He did pop into the office. It was very nice. He came in and said hello. And we're actually going to be graced with David's pleasure this time next week on the radio station that you're currently listening to.
Good, good.
Podcast. He's coming. He'll probably sit in between the two of you there, and he'll bring his LG phone, which has got Phone 7 loaded on it. And you can have a play with it.
Make room, Graham. Elbow room.
Yep.
Need another microphone here. We'll be good.
Excellent.
So Phone 7 is going to offer all sorts of middle-of-the-road things. I say middle-of-the-road. I haven't played with it enough to give any good critique one way or the other. But from what David was saying, Phone 7 is going to be positioned somewhere between the locked-down Apple iGadget sort of app store / device. So you've got the iPhone at one end of the scale. At the other end of the scale, you've got the unlocked, anything goes Android type operating system, platform. Yep. Where Microsoft want to be is in the middle. Not quite as locked down, not quite as open.
But they want something that'll work with the security features of things like Exchange so that it'll be able to work on corporate networks. And I would imagine that Windows Phone 7 is going to be very tightly integrated with that sort of technology.
Questions for next week when David's here. Very good questions. And, of course, the other thing, too, is what devices it's coming out on, we don't know yet. And David was very tight-lipped on that. Suffice to say that the timeline is Christmas. It's Christmas stocking material. So it'll be up there with everything else this Christmas, technologically, gadgetly type sort of thing-wise.
Speaking of Adam Turner, he had... Now, look, he'd signed about 150 different non-disclosure agreements, hadn't he, at the time, but he came into the TikTok Radio Studios a few weeks ago, or a month or so ago, and he had a device that was running Phone 7. And I was very, very impressed. It was a very nice user interface. It was very fast, very responsive, and it looked good. Well, I only had to play with it for 15, 20 minutes, but what I saw, I liked.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the model, I don't think. I don't want to get into trouble.
I would say everything allegedly.
Allegedly. But hopefully if David's coming in next week, we'll be able to ask him all his questions and more.
All right. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You come and say hello now, or forum if you want to do it in delay. Love to see you there.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03 8682 8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
If you've seen some of the stuff on YouTube, it looks a bit strange.
Whilst it is a high-def machine, it's only 720p.
Fraud-def.
Yeah, fraud-def. Yeah, exactly. Take note, Apple, HDMI output cable and carrying case.
Why would I want an Apple TV without a hard drive?
What you're describing is bloatware. The handset formerly known as the iPhone.
Entertaining.
I don't like spam.
Informative.
There are public VPN services.
Independent.
They've run up to, what, 400, 500?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello there.
Off you go, Dr. Graham. Dr. Ron.
I have an apology to make. Adam, please accept my apologies. Microsoft, please don't send the lynch squads around to Adam's house.
Somewhere over the other side of town, there's a black helicopter hovering over Adam's town, and the Microsoft ninjas are descending on ropes.
It wasn't
that'd be Steve Jobs.
It was not phone 7. You know how a few moments ago we were saying, look, some of the strange things that we say and we make mistakes at the spur of the moment, and that's at this time of night. Yes, it wasn't phone 7, I think.
I have the tweet pic on my screen at the moment, and I can confirm that there was no phone 7 GUI anywhere.
I think it was 6.5, and I think it was on an HD2 handset, and it wasn't Adam. It was someone else who was in here, and I'm pretty sure they were running, it was 6.5. And it was skinned. It was a particular skin of 6.5.
So the skin tricked you.
The skin tricked me. Yeah, so I apologise. So, Microsoft, you can stand down at ease.
Well, it's a Blade Runner. It's a skin job.
You haven't had a leak?
No, there's no leak. There's no conspiracy. Everything's A-OK.
Nothing to see here.
Move on.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
There we go. My apologies.
I was suitably impressed how quick the phone rang after you said those things.
We had phones ringing.
It didn't just ring. It was bouncing off the desk. It was quite something to see.
We had tweets coming in, emails, faxes spitting out, and we haven't even got a fax machine. So, yes, Dr. Ron, you're wrong. And, yes, I apologise.
Yes, you can. If you go to TweetPic and search on the Tech Talk Radio pictures, you'll see the four on the desk there, and there's no phone 7 amongst it yet. But you will see one next week.
Next week. We might be able to say something more definite.
I'll keep my mouth shut and let you guys.
Whilst we're on the phone, on the subject of mobile phones, I figured this would be fairly appropriate before we get to the couch for this week. If you're in Canberra, we don't go to Canberra. We probably do as a podcast, but we're not on a...
We go everywhere on the internet.
On the internet we do, but we're not on a radio station in Canberra.
Hello, Canberrans. I think there's probably people who listen to us in Canberra.
If you should listen to us if you're in Canberra. Probably they do, but
there's several people
let's
in
not
Canberra
go there,
I know
shall
should
we?
Listen to
yeah,
us. Yeah,
absolutely. new laws in the nation's capital make it illegal to cradle or nurse a mobile phone whilst driving.
Yes.
Cradle being, I'm assuming, like have it in your lap or pick it up and put it in the phone cradle, maybe?
This manoeuvre here.
So that's really good for radio, Graham, and we can even hardly hear you when you're off mic like that.
What I just did was I balanced my mobile phone on my shoulder and
you squeezed your elbow up and pushed it up. Is that what cradling
is?
My
shoulder to hold my phone to the
okay.
You do the Vulcan nerve pinch thing with with your head and your shoulder.
Okay. Well, anyway, new laws: no cradling or nursing a mobile phone while driving. The laws that came into effect last week prevent Canberran drivers from holding a mobile phone cradling a phone on their shoulder, as just demonstrated by Graham, or resting it on their lap while driving. Now, here's the sting in the tail of this one. Those in breach face a $271 fine for the loss and the loss of 3 demerit points, said the ACT chief minister up there. That's a big fine. What's it down here? I don't think it's about 180 down here or something, isn't it?
It used to be that. I think it's gone up.
Has it? Well, see, I've never been done, so I wouldn't know. I always have a car kit. I'm a good boy when it comes to talking.
I got done many years ago and I learned my lesson.
Do you? Or I just use a Bluetooth device and ignore the phone ringing when it's people that aren't too important at the time and get into a lot of trouble.
Why didn't you answer your phone? I've got one of those Parrot Bluetooth kits in my car, which is very, very good,
I've got a Blue Ant Bluetooth.
I've seen your Blue Ant.
Yeah, it's good. It sticks to the sun visor.
That's good. You'll need it if you're in Canberra again shortly. Don't ever pick the phone up in Canberra.
The Parrot ones, the one I use, actually integrates with the sound system in the car.
That's clever.
So that it mutes the radio and comes out of the car door speakers, and it's really, really nice to use.
Is it?
Really nice.
Here's a bit more on the Canberra thing. According to local laws, drivers can only use a mobile phone to make or receive a call if the phone is secured in a cradle or if it can be operated without being touched and is not resting on any part of the driver's body.
This sounds remarkably similar to the laws in Victoria, which were changed a little while ago to put very, very similar conditions
they can
in
text,
place.
Though.
You've got to put them... They can text,
just
no.
kidding. I just thought I'd...
No.
Have you seen
Please
people?
Don't text and drive.
I'm lucky because I drive a car which is a little bit elevated off the road.
Yeah.
And as you're driving around, the
yeah,
number of
people...
Yeah,
you're one of those people that frightens the life out of people like me who drive normal cars.
Not, I am not. I don't do that, only when necessary. But actually, as you're a little bit elevated, you can look down at the people in the car next to you. And
yes, I must admit, when I was travelling...
There are a lot of people that text and drive.
Yeah, when I was travelling... a little while ago, interstate, I hired a car a little bit similar to yours. And, yeah, you do feel a... You do get to see a lot more from that higher position, don't you?
You do.
But
great in summer.
Yeah. Regardless of the local laws, yeah, please comply with the local laws, but...
And common sense.
But common sense is the thing. Don't text and drive. Don't operate your mobile phone. Hold it to your ear while you're driving. Just talking while driving, even with a car kit, is enough to reduce your reaction times and cause distractions. So
I wonder if the law discriminates between a mobile phone device and, say, something like a TomTom. Can you update your TomTom while you drive?
In Victoria, the law does not discriminate. Any electronic device like that you operate in the car must be secured properly in a proper mounting device.
What about a microphone on a CB radio or something like that? Because people still use those things, don't they?
Do they?
I don't know. I'm just speculating. Is that like an electronic device that you're picking up?
I would imagine so. It's not solidly mounted to something. I would imagine that would be not quite right. legit either.
What about your iPod?
And it never
if you're
used
changing
to be.
Tracks?
In the old days when I used to do that, I used to have a microphone in the car that it was certainly illegal to use it when I was driving. Yeah.
Okay. What about an iPod? Changing
iPod's
track?
The same. It's an electronic device. Yeah.
What about changing the radio?
It's got to be. No. Well, the radio's fine because it's securely mounted in the car. It's in a proper mount. The iPod.
So it's anything that's flimsily flopping around.
The iPod would be
a piece
fine.
Of cable or something.
The iPod would be fine if it was in a cradle mounted to something. If you get one of those things that mounts to the window or to the air vent or to something else that secures it in place so it doesn't float around. In Victoria, anyway, it's legit.
Okay.
But, yeah, you can't operate an electronic device that's floating around free, that's not secured in a proper mount designed to hold it.
Excellent. I'm glad we've cleared the air on that.
And even in play, you know, the law's going to be different where you are if you're listening around the country or around the world, but common sense prevails. Just don't do it. It's not safe.
Germans have had a big win against Google this week, too.
Yes.
With hundreds of thousands of Germans requesting to have their homes kept out of Google's Street View mapping service.
Oh.
Citing company sources this week, and I'm not even going to pronounce his name, but I think it's Der Spiegel, or Spiegel, said hundreds of thousands of tenants have already objected to inclusion in the Google service, which uses the cameras on the top of the cars to go around and take photographs of people's houses. So, is this the beginning of a trend where German or people can opt out of being in the Google Street View? What will that do to the service?
I think in a lot of parts of the world, that would not legally stand up, that if anything that you can see from the street is fair game.
Oh.
Google have always had a policy that you can request them to remove photos if you object to them for any particular reason.
You can request for them to remove the details like registration numbers or
which
cars.
Which I think that was a matter of course anyway.
I think they do that anyway now. Or identifiable faces, sometimes they will blur out or if, you know. But, yeah, I mean, and that's nice of Google to do that. But
it's an all care, no responsibility type policy.
Yeah,
that
I mean, if what you do can be seen from somebody in a public place, like from the street, then...
They're within their rights to take a photograph,
game,
aren't they?
Yeah.
I think so.
But it's like anything photographic. If you're a news crew or just an avid photographer and you're down the street or taking pictures of people in public places, there's no law against that.
In Australia, the news media would absolutely appeal that to the highest level if they said you can't take a photograph from a public place.
Yeah, if you were working with a news crew, Andrew, and you're in the middle of Swanson Street, you want to get some footage of a tram going past and you just happen to film somebody on a tram.
Or the buildings in the background or a private residence behind the tram, yeah.
Now, I've been corrected in the chat too. Der Spiegel is a magazine, not a person. See, that's why I don't go there. But that's a magazine in the not a person.
Lurker in our chat room.
Yeah. See, our listeners know these things. This is good.
Our listeners know a lot.
It's scary, actually. They should come in here and do the show one night. Maybe we'll swap. All right. Yes, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, and Graham Callaghan in this evening. Internode, ISP of choice for a lot of people, very well reputable ISP, internet service provider, has finally released some naked DSL plans. Now,
well, they've had naked DSL plans for a while.
Yes, yes, but this one's a terabyte. You remember how everyone else has done the terabyte things lately? This is one of the big ones.
One of the big pterodactyl plans.
That's it?
Yep.
$150 a month gets you a easy naked DSL plan, which includes a terabyte of data, and you get the appropriate phone things and stuff that go with naked DSL plans.
Well, these are the T-shirt ones we spoke about in the news. Was it last week? Yeah,
I don't know where this one has a T-shirt because it's naked.
Oh.
It's topless.
Oh, okay. So it's anti-T-shirt.
It could be.
An anti-clothing plan. Because when you go to their main website, you go to internode.on.net, you can see the small, medium, large, extra large, XXL, triple XL T-shirts and things.
That's it. Okay. But this is naked, so potentially no T-shirt.
No T-shirt.
I don't know how they're going to market this one.
No.
But I'm looking forward to it.
Yes.
Now.
We're using clothing to market a naked DSL product doesn't make much sense, does it?
No. No, but I just thought I'd throw that into the mix. It's good. We're seeing a lot of competition in this sector at the moment, thanks to Telstra, who've basically become very aggressive in the retail space, probably thanks to the NBN, because they're going to have a lot of their, money-making equipment removed or sold or bought by NBN Co. So, yeah, anyway. All right, let's move on to this week's View from the Couch. We're heading back down the Phone 7 side of things. Here's Adam Turner's first look, apparently.
It is
second look. This is his first look.
He never. He definitely didn't see it here a couple of weeks ago in the studio.
No, you can see the tweet pic to actually verify that. They're all on the table there. But here's Adam Turner's first view. Had a chat with David Glover. What were you going to say?
Stupid Dr. Ron, I was going to say. Yes. Here's David Glover.
David Glover.
Press play.
Now?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Thanks.
So we've taken the view from the couch on the road again this week. I'm having coffee with David Glover, who's Microsoft's Windows Phone 7 evangelist.
That's spot on, yep.
We've been having a quick chat about the Microsoft's approach to the online App Store marketplace and how it contrasts to what Apple does and Android does. Can you talk us through it?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the key thing for a lot of, certainly from a developer's perspective, is you want to know what you're targeting. And so we've got some very, very clear content policies up there, which kind of makes sense. There are things like, okay, you can't go and do something which is brutally, you know, sexually explicit or whatever it is. You can't show games of hate and violence, all those sort of things. But they're kind of common sense. But it's a really well-defined document, extremely transparent. So as a software developer, I can have a lot of confidence to say, okay, I'm going to go and build this application, and I'm not going to suddenly find that Microsoft's going to reject it. As I kind of said before, we don't have any silly business. So if you go and write a better application that's on the device than what we've written, then party on, go off and do it. So we're not going to turn around and say, hey, look, you can't go and compete with us.
So apps aren't going to magically disappear because they happen to clash with your business model.
Exactly. So that's... just make sure we get this on the right way. Yeah. That is the right... Yeah, so they're not going to disappear.
Yeah.
So the first, from a software developer's perspective, that's really key and important. The other aspect of it is we provide a set of great design tools and developer tools free of charge. Mm-hmm. And if you go up to developer.windowsphone.com, you can actually go up there and register. You can also just download the design tools and developer tools and a great emulator as well. So you can kind of get that whole developer experience free of charge from developer.windowsphone.com. There's stacks of training resources. So if you just hunt around for Windows Phone 7 training kit, or in fact, if you go to my blog, which is blogs.msdn.com/dglover, and you'll see my recent postings already about that. So you get lots of training resources, things like that. So in terms of building applications for Marketplace, we kind of offer some really unique stuff. So the thing that I really love about one of the things we do is this thing called a trial API. So as a software developer, I can say, has this user purchased or downloaded this app in trial mode? And I can then say in my code, like if it's in trial mode, let's allow 30 days, for example, or let's allow 3 days or 3 weeks of gameplay or whatever it might be. Or let's say I'm going to gray out certain parts of the application, which kind of entices the end user to go and buy it and then go through the whole purchase experience. The real beauty of the trial API is that you don't end up with a marketplace which is cluttered with the free version and the paid for version. So the end user just sees they have less clutter. From a developer's perspective, you're not competing with thousands of applications out there with the free and paid for version. From the end user's perspective, it makes it easy to find, and they can download the application once as in a trial mode, and then they can go and activate it, purchase it, and then it just basically activates the app that's already on your device. So you don't have to go and download it again. So that's kind of really a great experience from an end user and from a developer's perspective.
So you were saying there'd be some restrictions on the number of free applications that a developer can offer?
Yeah, so just to kind of be clear, there is no real restrictions, but we're just kind of trying to kind of skew the kind of applications up in the marketplace.
So you don't want 50,000 free fart apps?
Exactly. So within the registration fee for Marketplace, you can go and put up there as many paid for applications as you want. And the whole rationale behind that is we want to try and drive quality applications that customers would value. Now you can go and put up there for 5 free applications within that Marketplace subscription, or if you want to go and put up more, then you can go and pay an additional amount of money. That's not to say that some applications will be high value, they'll be free. So for example, the Telstra one or the domain.com, those types of organizations will often put up a free application, but they're kind of, their business model is different. They're not driving it directly from the revenue from that application itself. So that's the kind of the key thing about that. Again, from a software developer's perspective and a kind of, I guess, from a consumer perspective, we'll have the best of both worlds, I believe. We'll have a choice of devices. So the customer can go and buy something at different screen sizes or a keyboard or whatever it might be. And then from a developer's perspective, you've got a consistent set of hardware platform out there, so you know what you're targeting. So you don't have to worry about, oh, which version the OS has got on here, or have they bought one with a keyboard, without a keyboard, things like that. You don't have, that's all abstracted away from you. So it means the consumer gets choice of different types of devices, and the developer gets consistency. So it's a really good story out there for people building applications. Kind of a bit of a side, we announced the release to manufacture of the developer tools, and they will go live September the 16th in the US, so that'll be basically the 17th Australian time. And to date, we've had about 300,000 downloads of the beta tools. So now they go live, which is really exciting because people can now start building stuff in earnest and you know what they're targeting. So that's kind of how that works.
Perfect. Thanks very much for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
There you go, a little bit on Phone 7. And that man you just heard then, as opposed to, well, actually, both of them. Adam Turner will be in the studio for our 300th birthday show, which is not
fantastic.
Next week. It's the week after.
The week after.
October 4.
Yes.
Is the originating date. And next week, we'll be having the man himself, Mr. David Glover, in to talk about Phone 7. Between you two, he'll bring gadgets in.
We'll Microsoft's Windows Phone or Microsoft Phone 7 evangelist. Is that what he is?
I like using the word evangelist.
I can't get the name of this product straight in my head.
Phone 7.
Phone 7.
As opposed to Phone Home? Phone 7.
Phone 7.
I think it interrelates to the Windows. We'll ask him how they got the number 7. Didn't we have 6.5 and then it went to 7?
So that would make sense.
It would. It's just the evolutionary.
So there's no mystery to it at all.
I think it's purely coincidence, like you see on the credits of movies. Any relationship is, yes.
It's purely coincidental.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one. Now, speaking of coincidental things and the likes, when JD was on the show last year sometime.
Justin Dunlop,
our Mac guru.
And occasional panelist.
Occasional, yeah. Well, what happened tonight? I think I got a text or something saying stuck.
See it got held
time.
Up at work at the last minute. It's very unfortunate that work for us sometimes just doesn't fully understand the importance of the Tech Talk Radio commitment.
This is
and
true.
Don't make allowances for us all the time to come in. No, not to worry.
Not to worry. Anyway, we took a – remember when the little mini 7 – what do you call the ITV they call it now, don't they? It used to be called the little media – you know, the little PC that Mac had?
Apple TV.
That's the one. Thank you, Graham. That was the one. Anyway, it's shrunk down a little bit. They removed the hard drive. They've taken away HDMI at not HDMI. I shouldn't say that. They took away 1080i, the actual high def of high def.
They took away that resolution. They've still got the HDMI as the interface.
Yeah, and it sort of
so it runs high def, but at 720.
Yes, well,
720 lines.
Fraud def, to use your words.
Yeah, I'm not sure I was being entirely serious when I said that.
Well, no, I agree with you. I concur. 720
It's not real high def, no.
No, it's marginally better.
But then you could make the argument that real high def is 4K.
That's film. 4K, yes. You can live the dream if you like. It's very nice watching 4K.
I think I just went cross-eyed. Oh, what? all these P's and I's and interlaced. And
suddenly you've got a K.
And so,
where'd that K come from?
Zachary.
Yeah.
4K is, as Andrew says, it's one of the formats for distributing film in high def as video.
Yes. We have like four levels. There's standard def, what we've all used to love and adore for many years.
Yep.
Then we moved up to high def, which is 1980 pixels across. Then we moved up
1920 by 1080.
Yeah, sorry. It's late. And then we moved up. Then you move into the feature film area, which is 2K, which is sort of the low end.
Up until then, we've been measuring the resolution according to how many lines, how many vertical dots.
Now we're talking pixels.
And then when you get to the film format, so you talk about how many horizontal dots. So 2K is 2,000 pixels across.
Yep. And then the one above that's 4K.
4,000 pixels across.
And that's where they've got to at the moment, but I'm sure they'll come out with new and bigger ones as time goes by.
Absolutely.
They do that. 4K is very impressive, though.
Are there any TV networks at the moment still broadcasting an HD channel?
Yes.
Yeah, they're broadcasting HD channels with rubbish on. They're not broadcasting any of their main programs in HD.
Okay. The ABC run their Channel 24 is in high definition.
Oh, of course, the news one.
But that's fraud def. That's only 720 lines.
That's not 1080.
And it's all up, except for the studio stuff, it's all upscaled, grungy stuff off people's phones and beta cams and God knows all over the world.
They do tend to mix and match technologies these days in TV stations. Like, I think I was watching one of the breakfast news programs the other day.
I was watching it with you. It was when we got together that morning during the week, and I came in and had a look at your nice, brand-new, flashy Sony Bravia, which you've got up on the wall in the office.
Yep.
And you had it on News 24, did you? Or?
No, I think it was the one of seven.
I think it was Channel 9. We had it on, and I was up close and looking at it, and it was horrible. Like, all you can see the grotty, pixelated, character-generated text down the bottom of the screen. Then they have a nice high-def
insert
picture. And then the actual background image was like standard def and horrible, and it was like a mishmash of different resolutions. I never realised it was that bad before until I looked at it on a good monitor.
It's like that. And it's not going to get any better, I think, with what's Channel 7's Mate kicking off, I think, Thursday?
Is that going to be high def?
Grand final day, isn't it?
Is it grand final day?
Saturday.
Oh, okay, well, there you go. So
I thought.
When the granny kicks in.
I might be wrong. I don't know.
We've got Mate, and we've got the Channel 9 girly channel. Their HD's going. They've gone against Seven's got the blokes and Nine's got the girls.
I see.
And ABC went wayward, and of course you've got one HD.
ABC's got news, and Channel 10's high def channel is all sport.
I actually watched one HD for the first time on the weekend. I was watching the footy. It was good. Quality was reasonably good too, compared to everything else. Let me just put that caveat in.
Okay.
Wasn't too shabby. And the character generation was HD, you'd be pleased to know, Dr.
Ron. Oh, I'm glad.
Anyway, we can prattle on about the standards of television in this country, which are, all the more reason to go and buy a Blu-ray player and embrace BitTorrents. But let's not. Let's talk about some of the Apple gadgetry, which we started talking about a few moments ago when we were saying there's been a lot of, conjecture about why Apple is doing what they're doing. And here it is from the man himself, Mr. Steve Jobs, to shed a bit of light on the hobby that is television for Apple.
The problem with the television market, the problem with innovation in the television industry is the go-to-market strategy. The television industry fundamentally has a subsidized business model that gives everybody a set-top box for free or for $10 a month. And that pretty much squashes any opportunity for innovation because nobody's willing to buy a set-top box. Ask TiVo. Ask Replay TV. Ask Roku. Ask Vudu. Ask us. Ask Google in a few months. So all you can do... Sony's tried as well. I mean, Panasonic's tried. A lot of people have tried. They've all failed. So all you can do is add a box onto the TV system. You can say, well, gosh, I noticed my HD TV has a bunch of HDMI ports on it. One of them is coming from the set-top box, so I'll just add another little box with another one. Well, you just end up with a table full of remotes, cluster full of boxes, bunch of different UIs, and that's the situation we have today. The only way that's ever going to change is if you can really go back to square one and tear up the set-top box and redesign it from scratch with a consistent UI across all these different functions and get it to the consumer in a way that they're willing to pay for it. And right now, there's no way to do that. So that's the problem with the TV market. You know, we decided, what product do we want the most? A better TV or a better phone? Well, the phone won out, but there was no chance to do a better TV because there was no way to get it to market. What do we want more, a tablet or a better TV? Well, probably a tablet, but it doesn't matter because if we wanted a better TV, there's no way to get it to market. The TV's going to lose until there's a better, until there is a viable go-to-market strategy. Otherwise, you're just making another TiVo. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the fundamental problem. It's not a problem with technology. It's not a problem of vision. It's a fundamental go-to-market problem. But that's why when we say Apple TV is a hobby, that's why we use that phrase.
Yeah, there's a hobby. Does that make it... I guess it explains why Apple does what it does, especially with those the TV devices. Certainly puts it into perspective a little bit. But, are consumers really... Are we suffering now because of the subsidies? Like, you could say the same for the mobile phone market. You know, phones are $0, yet they're subsidized, but yet we seem to have a lot of new gadgets and things coming out. I must admit, I'm not a pay TV subscriber.
But if you were, you would understand what he's on about.
I guess you would.
The one of the main reasons, in fact, the main reason, there's not a Windows Media Center in my lounge room at home is because of the Foxtel box.
Which you have Foxtel, do you?
Can't integrate with it.
Apparently Foxtel's going HD shortly. I thought they already had it, but they're going
again. If you want to use a PVR and have that sort of system and you've got Foxtel, the only practical way is to use Foxtel's IQ.
Is that what you've got?
No.
Oh.
No, we.
So how?
But if we wanted PVR and all that sort of stuff, that's what we would need to have.
So how would you do that, Graeme? If you had the basic set-top box for Foxtel, and you wanted to use a media center to record,
you can't.
You can't do it.
No, there's no practical way to do it.
So the only way to record
the only way that you know in practice, what we used to on the existing Foxtel box has like a tape loop. And you know the old-fashioned, play and record sockets on your amplifier that goes out to your video recorder and goes in the line in and comes back from the line out,
which is horrible.
And then you have to program the Foxtel box to change channel at the right time, and then you have to separately program the VCR to record the show at the right time. And it's and of course you always get one of them a bit wrong, and you miss the show.
It's easy to get on BitTorrent, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, yeah.
They make it hard.
And yeah, well, Foxtel think they make it easy by providing the IQ device, which has the hard disk and all that built in. So it's the Foxtel receiver with the PVR all built into one device, and they make it really easy.
So they'd encourage people in your position to upgrade from the basic
set-top box to the IQ.
Okay.
That's right. But Steve Jobs' point, and it's quite right, is that because they're locked down, you can't go and buy... an Apple set-top box to replace the Foxtel one, because you can only use the Foxtel receiver with Foxtel because it's all encrypted. And so if you wanted to be able to have it, and the same thing with Microsoft Media Center, if I wanted to have Media Center, I can't. You know, there'd be no technical reason why you couldn't put a card in your Media Center that could receive the Foxtel signal, but it couldn't decrypt it. Because Foxtel have everything locked down. They only want you to use their box to do their stuff.
It's a closely guarded secret, that
That's
encryption.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, unlike a phone where you can just swap and change SIMs because it's one technology, many providers.
Yeah. And the reason being is purely just because of the regulated market. I mean, if Telstra could force you to only use Telstra phones on the Telstra network, they would.
They've tried.
But, you know, the market and the regulations are such that they can't. But I mean, Telstra would love to do that. You can only buy a telephone from Telstra, and it, you know, you can only buy a Telstra branded phone, and you know, they would love to do that. They'd love nothing better because it's again more of their vertical integration.
Well, they sort of make it hard by all the advertising and marketing that they, and what do they call it, branding that they put on a phone when you buy.
Well, they certainly try to encourage you to, but they can't stop you using another phone on their network.
That's right. And it's not just Telstra; it's all of them. They're all as bad.
Oh, they would all do the same thing, absolutely. But in pay TV, because, you know, the pay TV companies are seen as being, oh, they're hard done by because they had to do this double rollout and they're all lost money and the market's too small and oh, it's all this disaster in Australia.
And these are the same companies that the Coalition wants us to roll out the NBN with, because they're all a bit small. Yeah, okay. Sorry, just so, went one and three together.
Yeah. History repeats.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, certain people want us to repeat the same mistakes.
Lena in our chat room says, I love that the new Apple TV came out because I scored an older one for super cheap.
That is always a plus when new products are released.
And they're using it as a server, she says.
Oh, excellent. Okay, that's a good idea.
What you do with an old Apple, is it?
Comes Apple TV.
Now, the newer one does away with the hard disk, doesn't it?
It does.
And if you want to catch up on...
$99 or something. It's cheap as chips.
Yeah, one of Adam's views from his couch last week, couple of weeks ago.
You used Grabs in a promo. I remember that.
Well, yeah, he rants and raves about the new product.
Why would you take things out and then try and sell it? It sounds like a Harmony remote. That's another one of his passionate rants about recently, too. They take things out to make you buy the new one. Anyway, such is life. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening. We've got Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up, but not just yet. We're going to go to a track, and we'll be back with some Swedish news after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened during the course of the week.
It's a new experience, agreeing with Senator Conroy.
It's hard, isn't it? And
Julia. The more they lock it down, the more people will work around it.
Is it?
I don't know.
I just tried to unlock Andrew's phone with my passcode.
If you're going to cross the road, look both ways.
Entertaining.
So no more pub runs.
No more pub runs.
Informative.
Look, I agree with you, Graham.
Independent.
I can feel a churn coming on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I mentioned the word Optus, I think you've thrown it.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
And during the program break, as we just had then, it was a very quick break if you're listening to us on the podcast, because you would have missed that track. We're back very quickly.
We go into a bit of a time warp, don't we?
We do. We're just talking about takeout, which is we had the guys on the show just recently. Now, we tried them at work the other day, Brian and I.
Oh, yeah? How'd it go?
Well, it went reasonably well.
What did you order?
Pizza, I think, or it was curry. Curry or pizza? One of the two.
There was lots of curries and pizzas on it.
It was. And
what was the website again?
Takeout.com.au. And,
we had the guys in here who developed it and worked it out.
We did. Now, it went really well up to the point where the man delivered the pizza.
Yeah.
And then he wanted payment. I go, hang on a minute, we've paid for it online.
Oh, really?
So obviously they've got a few bugs to tease out there, but other than that...
So did you work it out easily, or...?
Yeah, we just printed out our receipt from takeout and gave it to the little gentleman, and he took off on his motorbike, never to be seen again.
But, fair enough.
We did pay for it.
Yeah.
It has been debited to the card, let me tell you.
Well, I hope the pizza shop got their money as well.
I'm sure they did. So, it seemed to work quite well. So that's takeout.com.au. Yeah.
Did you have an experience as well, Dr. Run, or...?
Yes.
Okay.
Just put a note in the chat room there saying I've dug a deep enough hole for myself already tonight. No, we did have an experience with takeout.com.au. It was a good experience.
How long did it take?
About normal compared with making a phone call or a phone order.
Ours took 45 minutes from clicking the submit button to actually receiving the goods, which were actually hot, but it was a tad... We were very hungry by the time you arrived, let me tell you.
But that's not too unusual for pizza. They often take half an hour.
Was it like a Friday night or a Saturday night?
No, it's middle of the week, I think.
Okay.
No, it would work well for us.
Yep.
Had an interesting conversation with a delivery lady about the merits of using the website and the internet for ordering food.
Oh, yes.
But we got our food, we got what we ordered, and it arrived in a timely fashion.
That's all you can ask, really, isn't it?
That's all we can ask for.
I see.
In Sweden.
How do you spell that word again we were looking for in the chat?
It's infamous.
famous, no, that's not the one.
Famous with an IN in front of it. No.
Oh, look at the time.
Andrew in Sweden.
This is the manic minute because we've got...
Oh, sorry, Andrew.
Well, I want to say, I've got a few pieces of paper. It's been rather slow.
Are you trying to do something that's on the rundown?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to start now anyway.
After all these years.
No, that's right. The Anti-Piracy Intellectual Property Rights Enforcement Directive.
Oh,
that's
no.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Oh, no. Anyway, I'm not going to like this story, am I?
Those people in Sweden, which triggered a massive dip in Sweden's internet traffic when it came into effect last April, has failed to force an ISP to cough up alleged pirate details to rights holders. That
good.
Is.
Okay.
Unable to settle a dispute between Swedish ebook publisher and the ISP ePhone, the Supreme Court last week handed the first case tried under the law to the EU Courts of Justice. So the Swedish Publishing Association launched a suit that you wear in the middle of the city. Grey. A suit. Immediately after the IPRED law came into effect on behalf of 5 audiobook publishers, Sweden's most popular authors. Anyway, they haven't had any luck yet. The association demanded ISP hand over subscriber details behind IP addresses it believed had either uploaded or downloaded rights-protected material. The case had yet to be heard in the 2 lower courts previously, with the initial ruling in favour of the publishers. Interesting. Sweden. They seem to be trendsetters when it comes to rights and things, because they had the Pirate Bay over there, didn't they? Was that Netherlands or something?
I think it was in Sweden at some point. I'm not sure that it is anymore.
They've got good broadband over there, I hear.
They do. You've got pretty good broadband.
Part of the world in general.
Now, in other news...
Just before you do move on, it is something we do have to watch very carefully. Our rights are being threatened quite severely. You know, it's not that I want to encourage breaching of copyright, but if people are going to be punished for it, there should be due process. Remember those words, due process, and look at how it doesn't feature in some of the treaties that are being worked out at the moment. Go on.
You mean as in... go to court and argue your case in front of someone who's impartial.
Yeah.
That is due process, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Having a right to put your point of view, a right to answer charges.
As opposed to being assumed guilty.
Yes, just on the say-so of the aggrieved party.
Aggrieved it is. Speaking of aggrieved, a lot of Australians are aggrieved on the fact that the Privacy Commissioner is a bit too slow to act on telco complaints. Would you believe that? University research group has criticised the Privacy Commissioner for delays in handling complaints against telcos. The Cyberspace Law and Policy Centre report found that 21,000 telecommunications-related privacy complaints were lodged with 3 bodies in the past year. And the Privacy Commissioner received 110 complaints, but took on average... That's not bad out of 21,000. 110 complaints, but took an average of 6 months to resolve them. Is that bad? 6 months to resolve? Because you're dealing with a telco, which takes 6 months to get your phone number changed normally.
No, it depends on how complicated the complaints are and what level they have to investigate, to what level they have to be investigated.
It's hard to imagine a complaint so complicated that it takes 6 months to get an answer from somebody.
Although the ones that wind up at the TIO, it was the TIO, Andrew, did you say?
The Privacy Commissioner.
Privacy Commissioner. The ones that wind up at the Privacy Commissioner might be that complex. I don't know if they get to that stage.
It's interesting. I was about to have a go at a spammer during the course of the week, and I thought I'd better get my facts correct. I have an email account. See, like Dr. Ron's taught me well here. I have many email addresses for many subscriptions, and it helps to be able to track back where spam comes from or who's given out an email address. So you have one. Anyway, I have an ISP / a registrar. That I have just one email address solely for their use only, so I know where mail comes from.
Yep.
And I got some interesting spam on it during the other week from a company called Dell, would you believe? They're not known for sending unsolicited email, I would have thought, Dr. Ron, in your fax days. But
I don't know if it was Dell. It was a retailer.
Okay. Anyway, I did send an email back to this said registrar and said, have you handed out my details to anyone? To which I now have in writing a complete and utter no. So I'm just about to pass all that on to ACMA and see what they do with it. So
that you haven't used that email address anywhere else. It's not like it's been in somebody else's address book and they've...
No,
you
know. Only this one ISP has this email address.
Hmm.
I received more SMS marketing spam from 3 during the week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and forwarded it straight to ACMA.
Did they send you a response?
They replied very, very quickly. So quickly, it's in fact.
Aren't you a three customer, though?
Yes.
So they're surely allowed to send you marketing information.
No, because I've specifically told them that I do not wish to receive marketing information.
Tick the box on the website, so you don't want
okay.
it.
And they've sent me a message which starts off along the lines of, are you wondering what the hottest 100 videos are? Click on this link for mobile television.
I don't get those. I've ticked the box, though. You're lucky, Dr. Ryan.
No, and ACMA's automated reply comes back and says, thank you for reporting that. We'll follow it up and you get a receipt number.
Right.
So hopefully if they get 100,000 complaints in the space of a day, then they might send them a rude email saying, stop it.
I had an issue recently with Optus and a telemarketer who said I wasn't on the Do Not Call register, but yet ACMA confirmed that I was on the Do Not Call register. I haven't heard back on that one yet, but watch this space. That was about a month or so back, if I recall. So it pays to be a good corporate citizen, because if we don't do it, no one else is going to do it, and they'll just get away with it, really, won't they?
Yeah, the problem will just continue.
Anyway, now the other interesting news, just briefly before we go to the Oddspot gadget, Google admits snooping Google admits that staff snooped on Gmail. You mentioned this during the course of the news too.
I did. Yep, I did.
He was going through reading people's Gmail messages, was he?
And such things. Yes, he was in an unauthorized fashion, accessing people's accounts. Now, he had access to accounts because he was a software engineer, and that was part of his job, but he was going above and beyond, I think, and he was almost to the point
I have access to some of my customers' email accounts because I'm their system administrator.
Mm.
But you don't actually sit there and go, with a cup of coffee, oh, I need some entertainment, I'll go read some emails.
Absolutely not.
No. Google confirmed that it had fired the engineer for a breach of its strict internal privacy policies.
As they should.
But provided no other details. The engineer also admitted to, there's a tech news and gossip blog, Gawker.com, and the technician that was fired admitted on Gawker that he had been fired, but also he did not detail the circumstances of the allegations that have been made against him.
Just don't read other people's emails. That's the moral of the story,
isn't it?
It's
a big responsibility when you've got that sort of access to systems. You have to learn to see things without seeing them. You have to learn to see the technical details without seeing the personal details, and you just don't go looking at stuff that...
Mm.
It's just, yeah.
Different from an employer's point of view. If you run your own mail server, you're entitled to look at your staff's emails. But that's another day, another story, and another legal advice down the track. Just briefly, one final thing. NBN Co. has reported massive progress in its IT infrastructure rollout as it started work on the first of two new data centres and embarked on a second wave of recruitment to support the deployment program. So obviously things are going gangbusters
now that we've resolved the political wrangling.
The network builder's head of portals and online services, Michael Bromley, told a conference that NBN Co. had received the go-ahead to construct its first data centre.
Fantastic.
And hopefully be online in January. There you go. There's the update on the NBN rollout. So
look out for lots more of those in the future.
Absolutely. Bit of fibre coming to a home near you.
Suffering Suck Attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03 8682 8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03 8682 8836. That's 03 8682 8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
Dr. On, listening to the stream.
Furious.
Correct. There's Tony Abbott, are you listening? Wireless is not the answer.
Wacko, I say.
Oh, did you download it?
I did.
I downloaded it too and I thought, what the?
It was brilliant until the power supply blew up.
What's the WAF like?
The WAF is very, very high. It has high WAF.
Entertaining.
He's had the little chip put in the back of his neck.
Informative.
I suppose I may as well just throw that one out.
Independent.
Yeah. I was watching you on Latitude.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm on a fly.
Can you hear me?
I'm on a plane.
Are you there?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole.
the BlackBerry Pearl 3G, boasting 3G and Wi-Fi. This RIM smartphone, RIM, Research RIM. In Motion,
yep.
has a high-resolution 360 by 400 pixel colour display. What they describe as high resolution.
Not quite as high as some these days, is it?
Not as good as your Sony Bravia, but that's all right. A 2 letters per key QWERTY keyboard, as well as an optical trackpad and dedicated media keys. Mm-hmm. It supports BlackBerry Messenger and instant messaging applications, does video recording, it has GPS, it has Bluetooth. It's a phone, it's an organiser, it's everything you need in a mobile device.
It's got Windows Phone 7 on?
No, it's got its own special BlackBerry operating system.
You did say that, I was listening.
RRP is 679 Australian. For more information, you go to au.blackberry.com. That's our gadget, Andrew, the BlackBerry Pearl 3G.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
This week's website is Django.com. J-A-N-G-O.
Did you get this from the Microsoft?
I did. I must confess. I must confess. I saw this at the Microsoft seminar.
This is one of Michael's websites.
So this is one of Michael's.
I presume with this one, if we've got the IE9 beta, we should load it up in that. Is that right?
No, it works on anything.
Oh, yeah. you should, but it will work in anything. This is a fantastic online music streaming service.
Oh, more music.
It's like Groove Shark.
It is. It's akin to Groove Shark and others that we've critiqued in the past. You simply enter an artist's name in the box provided where it says, enter the name here, where it's got example Madonna on your screen, right?
Yeah.
And Django will just start playing. It will just randomly pick a track and start playing for you. If you enter an email address and a password and you create an account with Django, then the site will let you create what it calls stations. You can listen to other users' stations, discover your own new music. The station feature will suggest and play music, which is similar to stuff that you've been listening to. So it does some intelligent...
Okay, and it looks like they've got searching. Some preset stations sounds there like, as well. They've got like R&B, pop, rock, electronic... Yeah,
Pandora. Do you reckon Pandora will ever come back? That was great. I love Pandora.
Well, Pandora is past it now. We've got things like Groove Shark and this one, and Django. Mm. You can share what you're listening to via Facebook and Twitter. You've got album art, which is displayed. You have song history, search history. They're all easily retrieved. Best of all, it's paid for by its advertisers, so for us, it's fee-free. So click on the advertisers.
But you can only search for an artist, not a track.
You can search for tracks too. I think once you sign up, can punch in whatever it is you want to listen
to. Give that a go.
It's very, very good. That's our website, Andrew. Have a look at it if you haven't already.
Okay. So have you compared it to Groove Shark? What's the difference? Noticeable difference? Anything? Or
It's very similar to Groove Shark. Yeah, it'll be horses for courses. See which one.
So it's just a matter of logging it up and having a bit of a play.
Absolutely. That's our website, Django.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much. I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Have you ever sent a text message to the wrong person?
No, but I've been using Google Voice of recent times and I've been sending bizarre, strangely constructed messages to the right people. I sent one to Brian today. He said, who's Loeb or something? And I was supposed to be someone else, but it really threw him. The voice stuff's good, but it's still got a bit of refinement, especially when you're in a noisy environment. Sorry, this is the Odd Spot, right?
United States police caught two teenagers trying to buy marijuana when they mistakenly sent a text message to the local sheriff instead of their drug dealer.
Bugger.
The sheriff in Montana replied to the message and organised for an undercover policeman to meet with the boys, aged 15 and 16.
I'll sell you some of that, he said.
Yeah, he said, come on down. One of the teenagers reportedly fainted when the narcotics officer flashed his badge.
Ooh, that'll do it.
The sheriff says the boys would not be charged since their parents were eager to take care of the punishment themselves.
I bet they were.
Be very careful when you send a text message that you know who you're sending it to.
My sister once upon a time sent a text message to what she believed her husband was.
And what did she believe her husband was?
Yes, because her husband used to work a long way away in certain things. I know that didn't come out right, but just go with me here, all right?
We'll work with you here.
Yeah, she believed she sent a text message to her husband.
She sent a text message to whom she believed was her husband, but she missed by one digit when she dialed the phone number.
Oh.
Anyway, the good nights and I love yous went to somebody else's phone, of which...
somebody she didn't know.
Someone she didn't know.
Dear me.
And anyway, apparently she nearly ended up causing a divorce.
Oh.
And a certain person rang up and said, would you please explain to my wife that I don't know you and I've never met you and all that sort of stuff. So it just goes to show, one misdialed number can do that.
Yes.
One of those socially awkward moments.
Socially awkward? Have you explaining that to the lawyers?
Have you ever received a phone call from a wrong number and you just and they say, hey, how you doing? And you go, yeah, good, how you doing?
Oh, you don't,
yeah,
do good. You?
Yeah. You see, they say, what you up to? Yeah, not much. Where are you? Oh, I'm here. Where are you? Oh, I'm here. I've dialed the wrong number, haven't I? Yeah, you might have. My record's about a minute, I think.
Oh, right.
A minute.
That's impressive. You've worked out who it is. Quite impressive.
No, I've never had that before. Normally they're telemarketers and you just want to do the same thing for the wrong reasons.
You can pick those, yeah.
You want to wrap it up as fast as you can.
They do. You don't.
No, you keep them on the line.
They get their benchmarks all out of kilter and stuff like that.
Their targets. The money and all that, yeah.
Sales targets.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can't do all that. Anyway, that's Tech Talk Radio for the week. We must go. No, I won't even say that. Next week, don't forget, Phone 7. Phone 7. Everything you needed to and wanted to know about Phone 7 will be coming to you.
We'll have David Glover from Microsoft.
In, who came in and showed us the devices during the course of the week. For the first time, no one else in the Tech Talk community had seen them until the last week.
Just to clarify
that. And he will be in next week to show us all about it. So that's Tech Talk Radio, chat.techtalkradio.com.au or Graham, the forum?
The forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
And if,
or, in particular, for the 300 of the show coming up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give us a ring.
Just leave a brief message for us for the 300th show.
Which is not next week, the week after.
Yeah, okay. On 03-8682-8836.
Yeah. Fantastic.
03-8682-8836.
It's time to go. Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.